Om Abhyayantu Mamangani Vak Pranas Chakshu Shrotram Atho Balam Indriyani Cha Sarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarota Anirakaranamastu Anirakaraname Astu Tadatmani Nirateya Upanishad Sudharmas Te Mayi Santu Te Mayi Santu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Good. Welcome back. When we met last time, we began the eighth and final chapter of the Chandogya Upanishad, and it's called Dahara Vidya. After the opening section, talks about that which is dahara, small, tiny, speaking about that small space in the heart. I'll introduce that briefly just to set the larger context. Remember that the sixth chapter was focused on sat, the seventh on bhuma vidya was focused on ananda. And here our analysis is, our inquiry is focused mostly on chit. And here, chit is described in a very poetic way. He says, in the Brahmapura, your body. Nice expression, the city of Brahman. So in that city of Brahman, there is a small... Actually, the word used is palace, but it's your heart. So it's this really, really tiny palace. Must be like you've seen these dollhouses, something like that, like a dollhouse. And inside that tiny little dollhouse of your heart is an even tinier little space. And in that even tinier little space is the abode of Brahman. Of course, Brahman is the all-pervasive, the term we used, chidakasha, consciousness which is like space, consciousness which is all-pervasive, boundaryless. How do we reconcile the smallness of the space in the heart with the boundaryless of consciousness? The answer is our famous clay pot. This is a very small pot space. On the other hand, that very small pot space is utterly non-separate from the all-pervasive space. So just as all-pervasive space is manifest in his little pot, in the same way, all-pervasive consciousness is manifest in that tiny space of your heart. That tiny space of your heart represents your mind, of course. So this all-pervasive consciousness is manifest in your mind, revealing all of its activities. Okay, and that really summarizes what we saw in the first three mantras. So with that, we can continue with the fourth mantra. So all of this is taught by an unnamed teacher with a bunch of students. And it's kind of a narrative style. Fourth mantra. Tam chet bruyuhu, tam chet bruyuhu, asmin chet idam brahmapure, asmin chet idam brahmapure sarvam samahitam sarvam samahitam sarvani cha bhutani sarvani cha bhutani sarve cha kamaha sarve cha kamah yada etat chara vyapnoti yada etat chara apnoti pradvansate va pradvansate va kim tataha atishishyate hiti kim tataha atishishyate hiti. So here comes the objection. We saw already one Purvapaksha in the second mantra. So the Purvapaksha said, how in that tiny space, in the tiny palace, anything that's so small must be useless. So that argument was already dealt with. Now comes the next argument. And tam chet bruyuhu, chet, suppose, bruyuhu, the objectors, the Purvapakshis. Suppose they say tam, to him, to the teacher, to the acharya. They say, chet, if, and all these words are run together, asmin chet idam brahmapure. They say, chet, if, asmin brahmapure, in this city of Brahman, the physical body, if what is in the city of Brahman, idam sarvam, the words are separated, idam sarvam, all this samahitam is established. We saw in the third mantra that that tiny space, he said, was all the worlds. And that seems very counterintuitive. How can the entire cosmos exist in that tiny space? Well, that's the idea. So in the tiny space in this pot is non-separate from the space that pervades the universe in that sense. We look at remember the terminology, the pot is nupadhi for all pervasive space. The presence of the pot makes all pervasive space appear limited, but there's no true limitations. In the same way, your mind, this is quite an important point, your mind is nupadhi for chidakasha, all pervasive space. Just as this finite pot makes all pervasive space seem finite, your mind makes all pervasive consciousness seem finite. Your experience is finite, is it not? Of course. But the finitude of your experience is not due to any limitation of consciousness. It's due to the limitation of your mind. If we break this pot, the upadhi goes away, what remains is all pervasive space. If your mind goes away, as it does in samadhi and deep sleep, what remains is all pervasive consciousness. So this was the prior objection. And now the second objection is related. He says, chet, if idam sarvam samahitam, if this entire cosmos is asmin brahmapure, it samahitam, is established, abides, exists. If the entire cosmos exists within this brahmapure, in this body, sarvani cha bhutani, and all creatures, everything that exists, sarvecha kamaha, and anything and everything that might be desirable, all desires. So if everything imaginable exists in this little space, which is in this Brahmapura, in this body, then when etat Brahmapuram, when this city of Brahman, what happens to the city of Brahman? Chara vyapnoti. It becomes old. Literally, it's pervaded by old age. Jara vyapnoti. It ages when it becomes old. Pradvamsateva, or it dies. So when the body remembers Brahmapura, so when this body, which is a Brahmapura, when it ages or dies, then kim, what, tataha, other than that body, other than the body, ati shishyate, what remains? Now, you may think, well, come on, of course consciousness remains, but it's a little more subtle than that. Shankara makes a really, really nice example here. He says, just to illustrate what the argument is about, he says, gata ashrata kshira dadhi snehari vat gata nashaha. He says, suppose you have a pot, and in that pot, gata ashrata, inside that pot could be kshira, milk, dadhi, yogurt, or sneha, oil. These are the Sanskrit, common Sanskrit words. He says, gata nashe, when you destroy the pot, what happens to the milk? what happens to the dahi? What happens to the... It's also destroyed. When you destroy the pot, the contents of the pot also goes away. So the objector here, the Purvapakshi's argument is, if the body is a city of Brahman, when you destroy the body at death, what happens to Brahman? That consciousness within. The milk in the pot gets destroyed when the pot is destroyed. So Brahman's presence in that small space of the heart also gets destroyed when the body is destroyed due to old age and death. This is the argument which is responded to in the next mantra. Saha bruyat, saha bruyat, na asya jaraya, na asya jaraya, etat jiryati, etat jiryati, navadhena asya hanyate, navadhena asya hanyate. Saha, we'll see just that much. Saha, that teacher, bruyat, should reply to such an objection. That says, just as if a pot is destroyed, the milk inside the pot is also destroyed. In the same way, when the body is destroyed, the consciousness inside the body also gets destroyed. By the way, in terms of experience, isn't it so? If the body is destroyed, if the body goes away, as it does in deep sleep, well, that's not a very helpful example. Our understanding, a person's belief about death might be that when the body is gone, so is consciousness. What does modern medical science teach? Exactly that, right? Modern medical science says consciousness is a product of brain activity. When the body dies, when the brain stops functioning, consciousness ceases. So this is...
Today's Newsweek has an article talking about they're discovering that consciousness continues after death.
There's a lot of debate about this and a lot of problems in the communication between science and Vedanta. Anyway, let's stay focused on our text, please. So, the perspective of modern medical science then is that when the container is gone, the contents are gone. That's basically Shankara's argument. If you have no container, you have no contents. Of course, that's not a... Remember, that perspective is a little technical, but it's important. No container means no content. That's only true if the container and content are of the same order of reality. And upadhi is a relationship where there is not the same order of reality. Space is a more abiding reality than pot. So you cannot say, when this pot is destroyed, you can't say space is destroyed. It's not true. If there were milk, look at that. If there were milk in the pot, the milk is as real as the pot. So if the pot is destroyed, the milk is also gone. If the container is destroyed, the content is always also destroyed if the container and content share the same level of reality. But space is a more abiding reality than pot. So when we can say that the pot is container for space, but in this example, when the pot is destroyed, space, which is the content of the pot, is not destroyed because it's not the same kind of reality. This is a problem in modern medical science. They want to make consciousness the same as any other physiological process. And it's a mistake. It's an error in thinking. Physiological processes are physiological, which means you can actually measure them. You know, they put this cuff on your arm and they measure your blood pressure and they poke things inside of you and they can measure all this stuff. I recently had an X-ray. They've found this stuff in my lungs. They said, oh. So this is, you know, anything physiological can be measured. Can consciousness be measured by modern medical science? They can measure brain activity. They can measure your EEG. They can also poke probes inside your brain and actually measure the electrical activity going on in your synapses. Good. Can they measure consciousness? They can't. They can only measure physiological stuff. They cannot measure consciousness. Consciousness is not a physiological thing that exists in the world available for measurement. The only way consciousness is known is in your own experience. It's a private reality as opposed to a public reality. So this is a categorical mistake that's made by modern medical science. They have this faulty definition of consciousness. What they mean by what the medical science, their definition of consciousness, should better be called responsiveness. You know, the patient's ability to respond to the environment. But their concept is completely different from our concept of consciousness. Okay, enough said. If the content and container of are of the same order of reality, when the container is destroyed, the content is destroyed. That is not true in this case. The Brahmapura is not as real as consciousness. Get rid of the pot, space exists. Get rid of the Brahmapura, the city of Brahman, and consciousness still exists. Space still exists in the case of the pot. Consciousness exists here. So Saha, that teacher, Bruyat, should respond to this objection. Asya, for that Brahman, for that consciousness, for that which is inside that tiny space of the heart. Asya, for that, jaraya etat jiryate. Oh, na. There we go. Bruyat na. That na is kind of important. Saha bruyat, the teacher should say, na asya jaraya etat jiryate. Asya, for that Brahman, jaraya, due to old age, etat na jiryate, this Brahman does not decay, does not get old. Your body gets old, consciousness doesn't get old. By the way, isn't that interesting? Think of who you were 20 years ago and who you are today. A lot has changed in 20 years. Our bodies have changed dramatically in 20 years. Aspects of our minds have changed in 20 years. But the consciousness by which your mind was known 20 years ago and the consciousness by which your mind is known right now, any difference? Got it. Very clear. Our bodies are aging quickly. Consciousness doesn't age. Na jaraya jiryate. It's not affected by age. Na vadena asya hanyate. And asya, when that body vadena, due to death, when there is a death of the body, nahanyate, that consciousness is not killed. Nahanyamane sharire, we saw in the Bhagavad Gita. So when the body ages, consciousness is not affected. When the body dies, the container dies. When the container dies, consciousness is not affected. Etat satyam. Etat sat brahmapuram, brahmapuram. Oh, what is this? Anuswara missing in the Devanagari. Asmin kamaha samahitaha. Asmin kamaha samahitaha. There should be a nakara or an anuswara by the ka. We'll just see that much. Etat brahmapuram satyam. There's something funny going on here. Etat brahmapuram, this city of Brahman, satyam. Huh? What is he saying? He says, asmin kamaha samahitaha, asmin, in which body, sarve kamaha samahitaha, all objects of desire are located. Everything is located in that space of the heart. The space of the heart is inside the body. Therefore, everything is located inside the body. And he says, etat brahmapuram, this body is satyam. Huh? We've never heard that. So that should sound funny. It does sound funny. And if it sounds funny, it means it has to be explained. And that's Shankaracharya's job. He says, very interesting. There's a little bit of Sanskrit here. Brahmapura is a compound, samasa, two words put together. And it can be interpreted in two ways. For our Sanskrit students, it could be a tatpurusha samasa or a karmadharaya samasa, which means it could be the city of Brahman or the city which is Brahman. Both meanings are possible. In the Tatpurusha interpretation, it's the city of Brahman. In the Karmadharaya interpretation, it's the city which is Brahman. And so Shankara says, Brahma Puram, Brahma Eva Puram, Karmadharaya, the city which is Brahman. Sharirakhyam tu Brahma Puram. Why then is the physical body called Brahma Pura? Why? Because Brahma upalakshanartatvat. In this, and here Shankara is working hard to explain some obscure statement of the Rishi. So the Rishi speaks here very obscurely. Etat brahmapuram satyam is a very surprising statement. Shankara has to make some sense out of it. So he does so, first of all, by reinterpreting the compound Brahmapuram, not city of Brahman, the city which is Brahman. And then he says the reason Brahmapuram, which is the physical body, the reason it's being called Satyam is, he says, it is an upalakshana, a representation of Brahman. The body is a representation of Brahman. In what sense? He says, tattu anritam eva. The physical body is really not satyam, but vacharampanam vikaro namadheyam, which we heard way back at the beginning of chapter 6. And that is, anything that exists in name and form is just a projection of ideas and thoughts, but the underlying reality because of which anything and everything exists is Brahman. So Shankara, to explain this obscure statement, Shankara takes it to the higher level and says, this city which is Brahman, this physical body, is a manifestation of Brahman. Just as a pot is a manifestation of clay, just as the entire cosmos is a manifestation of Brahman, your physical body is a manifestation of Brahman. This is how Shankara explains it. In that sense, etat satyam brahmapuram. This brahmapura, this physical body, which is a manifestation of Brahman, asmin kamaha samahataha, and in that Brahman, everything exists. So it's an odd statement, etat satyam brahmapuram, and so Shankara then explains it. That's one of the challenges of Upanishad, is Upanishads are, first of all, notoriously non-methodical, but worse than that, we're dealing with arcane and obscure expressions. And if you were to take these expressions out of context, they would seem contradictory. This sure looks contradictory, doesn't it? Etat brahmapuram, this physical body, satyam. It looks absolutely contrary to everything we've studied. So for this reason, Upanishads absolutely need to be studied with a good commentary, with proper guidance. Otherwise, there's no way we're going to get any proper meaning out of it. And if you say, why is that so? Remember, we're dealing with the inspired revelations of the ancient rishis. So they didn't... We joked about this in last night's class. We said the ancient rishis never had a conference to standardize their teachings. How is that? That's a very modern thing. You want to have a conference and then come up with a standard model and all of this stuff. Well, the rishis never had a conference like that. They never standardized their teachings, so be ready for anything. And the statement we just saw is anything. It's something very odd, and Shankara explains it nicely. Okay, continuing. Eshaha atma, eshaha atma, apahata papma, apahata papma, vijaraha vimrityuhu, vijaraha vimrityuhu, vishokaha, vishokaha, vijighatsaha apipasaha, vijighatsaha apipasaha, satyakamaha, satyasankalpaha, satyakamaha, satyasankalpaha. So he was talking about the Brahman, which is in the container, which is utterly unaffected when the container grows old or when the container dies. What about that Brahman? Eshaha Atma. This Brahman is Atma. Functionally, this is a Mahavakya. He's talking about Brahman. Now he switches to Atma. Whenever that's done, functionally you have a Mahavakya equating Tat Brahman and Tvam Atma. So, eshaha atma, this Brahman is atma, and that atma, remember our context, is the consciousness, which the all-pervasive consciousness present in that small space of the heart, which means present in your mind, illumining your mental activities. That all-pervasive consciousness illumining the activity of your minds is apahata papma. It is unaffected by papa. It is sinless. It is untainted. Unaffected by karma. This is a massive confusion in Hindu culture. Everyone thinks atma is affected by karma. First of all, atma is unchanging. It can't be affected by anything. Secondly, karma belongs to the one who did the action. We keep saying atma is a karta. If atma is not an agent of action, it can't do anything. If it can't do anything, it can't get any karma. So therefore, apahata papma, unaffected by sin, unaffected by karma. Also, the jaraha, the body was jaraya, what do you say? Jaraya, jiryate, jiryati. The body is affected by old age, but consciousness is the jaraha, free from old age, free from age, free from time, unchanging. That which is unchanging. What is time? This is just a really peculiar question. What exactly is time? And here's one way of understanding time. The difference between this finger and this finger. Now, what in the world does that mean? Well, there is some, there is some change. And this is actually not what Einstein taught, but this is more of a philosophical perspective on time. Time is a measure of change. Again, that's absolutely not what Einstein taught, but from a philosophical standpoint, time is a measure of change. The more something changes, the more time transpires. Something which is unchanging is timeless. That's the point. So therefore, atma is vijaraha, free from old age, free from aging, free from time. Also, vimrityuhu, for the same reason, atma is free from death. That which doesn't age doesn't die. Of course, that which wasn't born is not subject to death. Atma was never born, therefore vimrityuhu. Also, atma is vishokaha, free from shoka, free from suffering. Again, unchanging. In order to be affected by problems in life, something has to change. Specifically, our minds are affected by problems in life. Absolutely. Our mind, by the way, even for a Mahatma, the mind is affected by problems and tragedy in life. Absolutely. How can the mind not be affected? Body is part of the world, mind is part of the world, it is all subject to being affected. But Atma is Vishokaha, unaffected by the problems of life. And the Mahatma is one who knows, even though this mind is a mess, the consciousness which I am that reveals this mind, which is a mess, this consciousness is unaffected. That's the vision of a Mahatma. There's no perfection for the mind. The Mahatma knows, I am that unchanging consciousness, which is Vishokaha, utterly unaffected by worldly problems. And just some typical examples here. Vijigatsaha, without jigatsa. Jigatsa means a desire to eat, hunger. So vijigatsaha, free from hunger, and pipasaha. Pipasa is a desire to drink. Pipasa means thirst. Apipasaha. Atma doesn't get hungry. Atma doesn't get thirsty. And finally, Atma is sat. And we're going to have some problems here again. More obscure language, full of all this obscure stuff. Thank goodness for commentaries. So look at the problem. Let me see, you can understand the problem here. Atma is satyakama. Now satyakama, you may know the expression. It means whatever is your desire, it's magically fulfilled. It comes true. Satyakama. Whatever you want, you get it. So if you want a nice gulab jamun, that's my standard example, then just by thinking about it, you get one. How bizarre is that? Now, not only satya kamaha, your desires come true. Whatever you want, that desire is fulfilled. Also, satya sankalpaha almost means the same thing. Any sankalpa, any decision you have in your mind, satya, it becomes true. Whatever you want to accomplish, you do accomplish. No problem. No limitations, no obstacles. So satya kama, one whose desires are always fulfilled, satya sankalpaha, one whose intentions are always fulfilled, that's Atma. Even an enlightened person, can you say that of an enlightened person? So if an enlightened person says, I'd really like a gulab jamun, and then suddenly, pop, there it is, just like that. Or the enlightened person says, oh, I should build an ashram. Boom! It just rises out of the ground. How absolutely silly. Then what in the world are these words doing here with regard to Atma? So you get the point. I'm just pointing out how the language is strange, obscure. And if it's obscure, we have to dig deeper to understand it. And here we go. Here we go. No, not there. Where is that? 355 here. Not that one. Where is that? Page 355. Drishtantaha Sutantraha. I can't find where I marked it. I remember, I'll explain it to you. And I'm trying to find and mark that. Oh, yeah, it's right here. Sorry. So he says, in explaining this statement, he says, satyaha avitataha kamaha yasya. Saha ayam satyakamaha. Who is a satyakama? It's one whose desires are never untrue. So one whose desires are always fulfilled. But now he explains, vitatahi samsarinam kama. But the desires of a worldly person, of an unenlightened person, samsarinam kama, the desires of an unenlightened person are vitatahi. Indeed, they don't come true. Whatever you want, it doesn't just happen. Sorry. On the other hand, Ishvarasya tad viparitaha. For Ishvara, it's the opposite of that for an unenlightened person. Now, he's brought in Ishvara. Why? Ishvara is truly satyakama, right? Ishvara is the intelligence of the universe. So whatever the universe wants to happen, it happens. That's the laws of nature. The universe wants objects to fall. Ishvara wants this paper to fall. And there's no one and nothing that is going to obstruct Ishvara's sankalpa or Ishvara's kama. Sankalpa, intent, kama, desire. So it is Ishvara's intent and desire that this paper should fall, and no one can prevent that from happening. Ishvara is satya kama. Ishvara is satya sankalpa. Then what is this reference here to Atma being satya kama, being satya sankalpa? An enlightened person can recognize that my consciousness is the same as Ishvara's consciousness. The space in this pot is the same as the space of all pervasive space. Suppose the space in this pot first could think and second was enlightened. So imagine the space in this pot can think. Not only that, but the space in this pot is enlightened. And that space says, I pervade the universe. Possible. That's a perspective of the jnani, the mahatma, is one who can identify with the whole, with Ishvara. So here, the obscure expression, the enlightened person being identified with Ishvara, knowing that my consciousness and Ishvara's consciousness are one and the same, based on that, that enlightened person can say that Atma is Satya Kama and Satya Sankalpa. This is the perspective of the Mahatma. A little obscure, again, a number of expressions here, which are quite weird. But we can, with the help of a commentary, we can figure it out. So now, having discussed the perspective of an enlightened person, now we get the other side. As Pujya Swamiji said, having discussed the one who is wise, now we discuss the one who is otherwise. Got it. Yatha hi eva iha, yatha hi eva iha prajaha anvavishanti, prajaha anvavishanti, yatha anushasanam, yatha anushasanam. We'll just take that part first. He says, iha, here in the world, we have to break all these parts, yatha hi eva iha, here in this world, hi eva, indeed, in this world are many prajaha, many people, and those people, anu avishanti, they chase around, they follow, they pursue things. How do they pursue things? Yatha, according to, yatha anushasanam, according to how they are commanded. More obscure stuff, but this is not too difficult. People run around in life according to how they're commanded. And this is based on a metaphor. So all the servants in the palace run around according to how they're commanded by the king. In the same way, and the metaphor, by the way, is used extensively. Here, servants mean your mind and sense organs. So just as servants run around according to how they're commanded by the king, in the same way your mind and sense organs run around according to how they're commanded. Commanded by whom? And it's easy to make a mistake here. You cannot say commanded by Atma. Right? You get that? Atman doesn't do anything. We said, akarta. Your servants are not commanded by Atma. Then what is it that compels your mind and senses to chase after things in the world? The answer to that question is desire. We are ruled by our desires. Yatha anushasanam, according to how desires compel us, raga makes us chase after things, dvesha makes us run away from things. So yatha anushasanam, according to the way we are compelled by our ragas and dveshas, prajaha, people, anu avishanti, they pursue various things in life. And he continues, yam yam antam habikamaha bhavanti, yam yam antam abhikamaha bhavanti. Sorry. Yam janaparam, yam janaparam, yam kshetra bhagam, yam kshetra bhagam, tam tam eva upajivanti, tam tam eva upajivanti. So explaining how people run around, abhikamaha bhavanti. Abhikamaha, these desires, bhavanti, exist. People's desires exist, yam yam, for various things. Abhikamaha bhavanti, desires exist for various things. Yam yam antam, whatever particular thing. That particular thing that's desired might be, could be anything. Here the metaphor given is some place, like a house. So some antam here would mean some location, where you, some place you can live is kind of the context here for antam. So yam yam antam abhikamaha bhavanti, whatever place is desired, or yam janaparam, you might desire not just a single place, but janaparam, you might desire an entire country. Or yam kshetra bhagam, or a portion of that country. They're kind of odd examples, but again, rishis. You can't ask them, what did you mean by that? They're gone 2,000 years. we're on our own with the help of Shankara. So, or we could just take it in a more general sense. Specifically, it happens to be about locations that are desired. But really, it means anything that is desired. Whatever is desired, whether it is a home, whether it is some land, whether it is an entire country, tam tam eva upajivanti, you live based on the fulfillment of those desires. So you want a place to live, and upajivanti, you live in that place. Better, let me interpret it a little differently. You are dependent on a place to live. All the desires we have are examples of dependence. If you have a desire for something, if you desire a house, it means your sense of being okay depends on getting that house. This is an analysis of desire. What does it mean to desire a house? It means to feel that I won't be okay if I don't get a house. I will be okay if I do get a house. Therefore, my being okay depends on getting the house. Desire is an expression of a dependence. and a dependence on something external. And here's the basic problem of life, is we depend on so many external things which are undependable. If you depend on a house, that house can burn down. If you depend on land, I think of what happens in India, these poor farmers, then somebody will come and encroach on their land. They'll steal the land away. Even land can be taken away from you. Anything you possess, anything you want, anything you depend upon can be deprived from you. And whatever is taken away from you, then your desire is unfulfilled. You feel a sense of lack. You feel a sense of wanting. Shankara explains here, Esha drishtantaha, this example of land. You can get anta, a house, kshetra bhagam, a portion of land, or janapadam, an entire kingdom. And he says here, Esha drishtantaha, this example, a swatantra dosham prati, is to point out the problem of dependence. So you might be dependent on having a house. A king is dependent on having an entire kingdom. It's a dependence on something external. And not only do we, and anything external you depend upon is unreliable, can be taken away. That includes starting with our own bodies, can be taken away from us, families, friends, whatever external thing we come to depend upon, those dependents put us in a very vulnerable position, because whatever external crutches and supports we collect to make ourselves feel okay, all of that is undependable. It can go away at any time. Therefore, there's no inner freedom. The term Shankara used is swatantrata, independence, inner freedom. And not only are the external things that we depend upon, they're unsteady. Many religious people have a slightly different perspective. They say, okay, this world is unreliable. There's no guarantee of me getting happiness and lasting contentment in this life. So what I'm going to do is lots of rituals. I'm going to do so many rituals that I can make it to heaven. And when I make it to heaven, at least there, I can have some contentment and peace. Whatever dependencies I am unable to fulfill in this worldly life, I can remove all those dependencies in heaven. Not. Yad yata iha karma jataha lokaha kshiyate. Yat yata iha karma jataha lokaha kshiyate. Evam heva hamutra. Evam heva amutra punya jataha lokaha kshiyate. Punya lokaha kshiyate. This line has been quoted and quoted by a gazillion Vedantins, and you'll see why. Tat, therefore, yata, just as iha, here in this world, in this life, karma jitaha lokaha, whatever loka here has a broader meaning, not just world, anything you experience is loka. So whatever loka, whatever you experience, whatever you want, whatever object of desire it is, whatever it is, which is karma jitaha, which is acquired through your effort, iha, here in this world, in this life, whatever you attain through effort in this life, kshiyate, goes away. whatever you get goes away. And it's you know, it's true in a general sense. No matter what you accomplish in this lifetime, you build up a great personal wealth, then you die. It's all gone. So whatever you accomplish in this life through effort, karma jitaha, whatever you accomplish in this life through effort, kshiyate, decays, goes away, is taken away from you, either while you are alive or when you die. One way or the other, it all goes away. Some of it goes away while we're alive, like youth goes away while we're alive. And whatever remains at the end of our life, all of that goes away at the moment of death. So yata, in the same way that whatever you acquire through effort in life goes away, in the same way, eva-meva, in exactly the same way, amutra, there. There means what? In the next life. So iha means in this life. Amutra means there in the next life. Presumably a heavenly life if you've done all your rituals properly. So amutra, there in the next life. Punya jitaha lokaha. Lokaha, whatever things and experiences and worlds and objects of desire, whatever you have gained in the next life, which is punya jitaha. Prior verse, prior line was karma jitaha, acquired by effort. This line says punya jitaha, acquired by good karma. So effort is to acquire worldly things in this life, and then punya karma, which is acquired through pious actions like rituals. So all of any experience you have in heaven, lokaha, which is punya jitaha, acquired through the accumulation of good karmas, that also kshiyate. It also goes away. Goes away in what sense? When you've heard this explained many times in the doctrine of karma, and that is if you go to heaven based on an accumulation of good karmas, that accumulation of good karmas is finite. And as you go on enjoying yourself in heaven, you are exhausting all those good karmas. Sooner or later, those good karmas are exhausted and your time in heaven comes to an end. The metaphor you've heard me give before, you go to Hawaii with $1,000. Yeah, it's gone in a couple of days. And then you have to come back. So that's just it. You can't. There's no way to go to Hawaii with an infinite amount of money. You can't have an infinite amount of money. It's always a finite amount of money, which means your vacation in Hawaii will always be finite. In the same way, any kind of heavenly domain is absolutely finite. This is where the Hindu concept of heaven is utterly different from the biblical idea of heaven, which is eternal. Chris, this is not the time for a big discussion, but what a theological headache. Heaven has a beginning and no end. Go figure. All right. So this first line is quoted again and again and again. A common refrain in Advaita Vedanta, and the obvious reason it's quoted so often is to warn people against this excessive ritualism for the sake of going to heaven, for the sake of a better rebirth. The warning is, as hard as you work in this life, whatever you gain is temporary, and even as hard as you work for a heavenly life, that's equally temporary. It's not worth it. Sorry. Tat ye iha atma. Oh, there's a typo here. Atmanam. There's a syllable un missing. It's where you see anuvidya. It's actually un-anuvidya. Kind of important. It changes, makes the meaning opposite. So we'll recite it properly here. Tad ye iha, tat ye iha, atmanam un-anuvidya pravajanti. Manam anuvidya vrajanti, sorry. Etancha satyan kaman. Etancha satyan kaman. Tesham sarveshu lokeshu. Tesham sarveshu lokeshu. Akamacharaha bhavati, akamacharaha bhavati. We'll stop there, pause there. So, ye, tat ye, sandhi. Ye, those who, iha, in this life, atmanam, the true self, anuvidya means having known, un-anuvidya, not having known. Not having known what? Atmanam, one's true self. So those, yea, those who, iha, in this world, atmanam, un-anuvidya, they fail to recognize their true nature, they fail to gain enlightenment in this life, what about them? Vrajanti. They travel on. So at the end of this life, they are reborn, they travel on. And we'll see about their travels, we'll see in just a moment. But un-anuvidya, they also fail to gain etan satyan kaman. A little obscure. They also fail to gain, I'll be a little loose in my interpretation, literally all desires, but it means they fail to gain fulfillment in this life. Sarvan kaman. They fail to fulfill all their desires in this life. An enlightened person is content. An enlightened person has no unfulfilled desires, recognizing oneself to be Satchidananda. But un-anuvidya, having failed to discover your true nature, having failed to gain complete contentment and fulfillment in life, tesham, for such people, for such unenlightened people, sarveshu lokeshu, in all worlds, and here loka does mean world, heavenly domain. So whatever heavenly domain they might go to. Remember, Hindu tradition has seven heavens and seven hells. So at least in the Puranas, they have a description of seven heavens and seven hells. So sarveshu, lokeshu, whatever heavenly domain that unenlightened person travels on to, akamacharaha bhavati. They are, we saw this word kamachara in a prior section, I forget where. Kamachara means you get to do what you want. You're fully independent. Kamachara means what you go wherever you want, you do whatever you want, you have complete independence. But these people we're talking about are not kamachara, akamachara. The gets lost there. Lokeshu akamacharaha bhavati. The unenlightened people, having failed to recognize their true nature in this life, having failed to gain contentment and fullness in this life, they travel on to whatever heavenly domain, and they continue to be dependent. That akamachara could be paraphrased as dependence. They continue to be dependent. Dependent on what? First of all, they're dependent on their punya to keep them in heaven. They're not independently in heaven. They depend on their store, so to speak, of punya karma. And when their store of punya karma comes to an end, they get kicked out of heaven. So they are aswatantra. They lack this independence. On the other hand, ata ye iha, atmanam, and there's more typos here. Atmanam anuvidya. It's all messed up here. Atmanam anuvidya. Ata ye iha, atmanam anuvidya vrajanti. Atmanam anuvidya vrajanti. Etancha satyan kaman. Etancha satyan kaman. Esham sarveshu lokeshu. Tesham sarveshu lokeshu. Kamacharaha bhavati. Kamacharaha bhavati. Ata ye. Could also be yaha. Yaha is better. Ata, but on the other hand, yaha, one who, iha, here in this life, atmanam anuvidya, having discovered the truth of oneself, the truth of oneself being satchidananda, atma, unchanging consciousness, utterly utterly independent, no dependence on anything external for the sake of one's fullness and contentment. So such a person, anuvidya, having known and having also gained etan satyan kaman, and also having gained all desires in this life, meaning having gained fulfillment in the life. Those expressions are strange. The meaning is very straightforward. So having gained fulfillment, having discovered their true nature in this life, having gained fulfillment in this life, and vrajanti, and when they leave at the end of this life, what happens to those, the enlightened ones, who vrajanti, go forth from this world, where do they go? Well, tesham, for them, sarveshu lokeshu, with reference to all the heavenly worlds, kamacharaha bhavati. That enlightened person is independent. So kamachara here, we're translating loosely as independent. Kamachara means you go wherever you want. So here, the enlightened person, when they die, sarveshu lokeshu, with regard to all the heavenly worlds, kamacharaha bhavati. If you interpret it literally, they go wherever they want. Well, and first of all, an enlightened person doesn't want. So there's no place they want. They don't want to go to Hawaii. You can give them a ticket to Hawaii, but they don't need to go to Hawaii for the sake of happiness. So this kamachara should really be interpreted as independent. It literally means going where you want, but its meaning is independent. Sarveshu lokeshu, with regard to all the heavenly worlds, kamacharaha bhavati, the enlightened person is independent. Independent means not dependent. Not dependent on living in those heavenly worlds. Living in those heavenly worlds is a state of dependence. Just as living in this world, dependent on your body, on your family, on so many external things, is a recipe for suffering, because whatever you have will be taken away from you. In the same way, going to heavenly worlds, you are still dependent on whatever punya karma that got you to that heavenly world. That punya karma is running out. Your dependence is a state of being vulnerable. Here, the enlightened person, having discovered their true nature in this life, having become fulfilled, vrajanti, when they die, sarveshu lokeshu, with regard to all heavenly domains, kamacharaha bhavati, they remain independent. They are not dependent on going to heaven. If you go to heaven, interesting, if you go to heaven, you're in trouble. From a Vedantic standpoint, if you go to heaven, you blew it. Because you failed to get moksha. What a tradition that says going to heaven is a mistake. And it is a mistake because the punya karma that takes you to heaven is finite. Your enjoyment of heaven will come to an end. Moksha is an unending, a timeless condition of fulfillment. That is moksha. And that's a good place to conclude our class tonight. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma hamritangamaya. Om shanti 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 om. That's it. Good. You're welcome. See you next time.